Episode 70 of This Developing Story. So I ended the last podcast saying I was going to have a two-week off break. Actually, more than 2 weeks. I think it was going to be like a whole month or two. It was kind of indefinite. But I have another podcast. I had tried to schedule a podcast with Ryan Florence quite a few months ago, and schedules did just not align, and then his schedule did align, and I had nothing else to do, so I said, let's do it tomorrow. So I recorded a podcast last week with Ryan Florence. He's the co-owner of ReactJSTraining.com, and he's also the co-contributor of our organizer of the open source project React Router. I'm not sure what you would call yourself as a open source owner repo manager. But anyway, we talk about a little bit about that. We talk a lot about how Ryan got into programming and the path that he got there for his quote-unquote developing story. And it was quite a good story. So hopefully you guys enjoy it. If you aren't familiar with Ryan Florence, please check him out. And I'll give you more details after his interview. So here you go.
Well, hello. I am Ryan Florence. I'm a co-owner of React Training, and where my partner and I train people on React. And I live up near Seattle, Washington. I got started into development kind of in two different periods in my life. So I guess I'll start with the first one. I was a teenager, and my dad had invested in an ISP, an internet service provider. I think it was called FIA.net. What was that? First Internet Alliance. So it's just this little company. Had this one guy working there, and he bought a bunch of modems and connected to the internet. And then some people listening might actually remember these days where you dial into your little internet service provider and you'd hear the modem making the noise, and then you were connected.
Yeah, like AOL.
Yeah, exactly. And then, and you always had to make sure that your Windows 95, no, not, yeah, 3.1? I think it was Windows 3.1. I can't remember which Windows. I just remember the little terminal app, and I had to have it like all configured correctly to actually go to the correct.
Yeah. So now you're really dating yourself, because people are probably wondering how old you were.
Yeah, I'm 35 now, so this was 20 years ago or more, 21 years ago. And so everyone who was a member of an internet service provider, they got like their own little homepage, their own little spot to FTP stuff to at a, you know, slash tilde and then your username. And so it was my dad's username, KCF, and that's where I put my first website. And back in those days, like it was so simple. You would just right click on someone's website, look at the HTML that they did, because there was no JavaScript and there was no CSS, and you could see what their HTML was, copy paste it into Notepad, and then make your own little web page. And then if you had a little FTP client, you could just throw a website up there. So that's kind of where I got started. And just had a lot of fun with it. I had a website up that it talked about like wakeboarding, and then for some reason I thought that I knew something about politics. And I got this little like Java applet thing for my sidebar menu, and I had Photoshop too. And so like it was a lot more about graphic design than anything back then with Photoshop. And I made this little website that had like wakeboarding politics and all this other junk. And apparently, I don't even remember how I got entered into the contest, but Microsoft had some sort of contest for websites, and they picked 10 of them, and I won. I was one of the top 10 homepages or something. I wish I saw the email to find out what this even was. And they gave me $1,000 shopping spree on the Microsoft store. So, do you remember those like bubble keyboards?
Yeah,
I guess They still have them out there, huh?
Yeah, they float around every now and then.
Yeah, so I used that $1,000 shopping spree to buy 9 of those keyboards. And then I sold 8 of them to friends and family, so I could actually just put the cash in my wallet. And then I got a learned C++ in 21 days book.
Oh.
And I got to day 2 and could not make it work.
Wow.
And I remember it like telling, like, one of the commands or whatever was print. And I remember just scratching my head at that, like, print? Like, it's going to print out of my printer? Like, it didn't make sense to me that it just meant print these characters to the screen, to the user. I just remember scratching my head so long just thinking about that and how weird it was that that print displayed stuff on the screen. It didn't actually print to my printer. Teenagers, man.
Yeah.
So I couldn't get, it was a calculator, and I just couldn't get it to work. Now that I'm older and I think back, I realize that their solution probably had a bug in it, and I just didn't have enough experience to figure that out. So I gave up on programming and just stuck to my HTML stuff, and eventually got hired by this ISP to do websites. So by that time I was 16, had a driver's license, I could drive into work after school, and I made these funny little websites for companies, and that was kind of it. And then my boss, the guy who owned the place, came to me one day and said, "Hey, he gave me like a Java book. He's like, you need to learn Java. It's the way that it's how things are going to be done on the internet." And fortunately, that's not the case. But I just kind of sat there, looked at the book, and I was like, last time I tried to learn this programming stuff, it didn't work out. And so I just quit my job and didn't worry about it.
Oh, that's one approach.
Yeah. And then about this time, Microsoft FrontPage came out. Macromedia Shockwave Flash came out. I don't think it was even Macromedia. I think it was just, I can't remember. It was before Adobe had it. And I got signed up for the betas on both of those. And then I remember CSS came out in IE3, I think, was the first one that started to have some CSS support. And I remember just kind of screwing around with that and like staring wide-eyed at my screen thinking, this changes everything. I was so excited about it. And yeah, made websites for my punk rock band and other bands in the local area. And that's like the first era of my developing story.
Cool. So did you go straight into college after that, or this is post college?
So this was all still high school.
Okay. So did you go to college and study computer science at all?
No. So I went to I'm LDS or okay. Mormon. And I went on a mission for my church for 2 years where you just sort of like, you disappear from the world and, go to try to convert people to the church and do a lot of service. And I was in Boston and, no computer and frankly, no time and no interest to even mess with this kind of stuff. Cause I was focused on something else. And, so I kind of just disappeared. This was, 2000.
Okay.
I just sort of bailed, and that's when JavaScript really started to take off. CSS started to solidify. Windows XP came out along with Internet Explorer 6, which was, you know, it was the bane of a lot of our existences. However, back then it was absolutely amazing. Had XHR now in there and really solid CSS support. Comparatively to what we saw before in browsers. So a whole lot of stuff changed. So when I got back from my mission in Boston, I wanted to sell some decals online and kind of poked around, did a couple view source on websites I liked and saw like just craziness. I saw all this JavaScript, I saw all this stuff, and I was like, oh, well, I guess web development's not for me anymore. And just kind of stopped doing it at that point and went to college and got a degree in economics. Excuse me.
Wow. So it's funny that you were gone for 2 years, and so my actual older brother, he's actually LDS as well. He actually served in Columbus.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So like small world. So side note, I talked to Kent C. Dodds.
Yeah.
maybe a few months ago, and then I ran into a couple other people who also are from Utah just generally. So why do so many people from Utah are in the JavaScript community? Like, what's the deal with that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, my business partner, Michael Jackson, is also LDS. And that was just by chance. Like, we don't know each other because of our religion. We knew each other from JavaScript. I don't know. We just, there's something holy and righteous about JavaScript.
Yeah, it must be. It seems like that. Yeah. It's like, yeah, just generally Utah, BYU grads, like I keep running into them. Like I'm helping out with some stuff on Gatsby, just like poking around with the issues and stuff like that. And then I think I met Kyle. I just brain farted his name. But anyway, the guy who maintains Gatsby, he's like, oh, I'm a BYU grad. It's like, oh.
Well, Kyle Matthews is?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that one.
yeah. So like this, everybody that does JavaScript, well, everybody in JavaScript, I don't want to say that, but the other way around, there's a lot of like people from Utah are in BYU and LDS Church.
Yeah.
Are doing JavaScript for some reason.
You know, and I just moved away from Utah a year ago up here to the Seattle area, and I miss it there. It was an awesome, awesome community. Religion aside, Utah, as far as JavaScript is concerned, is just a great place to be in tech. A lot of great new companies showing up, a lot of companies doing really well, and just lots of smart and fun developers around there. It's a great place.
Yeah. Well, that's good to know and good to hear too, as well. So as far as your economics degree, you jumped in like the biz world, did that, and then you said your second level of your, or second phase of your development story, like how did that jump in there?
Yeah, so I graduated in economics, and then, what do you do with an econ degree? You either go to law school, because people with econ degrees do the best on the LSAT, the test to get into law school, and that was my plan. And then you can go to graduate school and go get a master's and eventually a doctorate in economics and then work for the government, I guess. And then just sort of general business type jobs. Anyone who's a business management major, an econ major could compete with them for pretty much any job as well. I graduated from BYU in Idaho, their campus up there, got in a ton of snowboarding and it was awesome. And graduated. I was married at the time, and my wife still had two more years of school, and so we decided to stick around. And so I needed to go find a job, and there really wasn't. I mean, there's not a whole lot up there in Idaho, in that part especially.
I couldn't imagine.
I could have gone and worked for a call center, that kind of junk. Just looking around at my options, I decided to go into retail finance. So like selling life insurance and mutual funds. If anyone listening is familiar with that industry, I had a Series 7 license, so I could actually sell individual stocks and bonds too. And I've always kind of liked finance and how money works and how it grows and insurance and interest and all that kind of stuff. So I decided to go ahead.
Funny is that... So my background is finance as well, and I interned, got my Series 215.
Oh, okay.
But I graduated in 08, so there was no one that would sponsor me for the Series 7. Yeah. So I ended up just getting going this regular sales, IT sales.
They're like, welcome to the land of desolation.
Yeah. Yeah, the housing market had crashed like right before I got my internship at the finance company. And then by the time it rolled around, I found that I didn't want to work for them because they were kind of shady in practice.
Yeah.
To say the least. Yep. So I decided not to go with them, but that would have been my door into actual the realm. And I thought, oh, I could just like go to somebody else. Not being super naive, not really realizing there were no other options at that time.
Yeah. That was a rough time to graduate. So I went into that and that was rough. You're young. No one actually believes that you know what you're talking about. Because I didn't have any money, so I'm supposed to be telling people what to do with it. So struggled through that for a while, and then my wife needed for her final, for her photography degree, she needed a portfolio, and it could either be like a really nice printed and bound one, that would have cost us like $200 or something like that. or an online one was acceptable too. And so we saw that, and she's like, "Didn't you used to do websites like when you were a kid?" I was like, "Yeah, I don't remember any of that stuff though." And I was like, "But maybe it's worth $200 to try to figure it out." So she starts showing me all these flash websites, and I started making an online portfolio for her, and I stumbled into like Scriptaculous and MooTools, and just kind of started copying and pasting junk using what little I knew about HTML and CSS from back in the day, and was able to make a pretty decent looking website for her. Like, we had pictures of it, you know, like how some people decorate their house, they have like the little fake shelf that you just drill into the wall and then like set a picture on top of it. We basically like recreated that for her portfolio. Like, it looked like it was a wall, and it had like this wallpaper with a pattern on it. I'm trying to remember the name of the pattern. It's the thing that looks like the Boy Scout symbol. What is that called? I don't know.
I could picture it, but yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. And then it had like these pictures, some of her photography pictures, like they were in frames, and they were all black and white until you mouse over them. And then when you mouse over, it would fade into color. And yeah, it was pretty cool. And you click on it, and then a modal would pop up, and you'd see the image all big. And I was pretty happy with figuring out how to hack that all together without having a clue what was going on. I got to one point with it where I took one plugin that was from MooTools and then another plugin that was from Scriptaculous, and as soon as I added them together on the page, the whole page would break. And it was just frustrating. I'm like, why does this not work? And both MooTools and Prototype, which is what Scriptaculous was built on top of, defined window.$ and window.$$. And so if you put one on and then put the second one on, it would override that variable or that property on window and break all the rest of the scripts for one library or the other. And when I finally understood that they were incompatible on the same page, I had to pick one or the other. And, you know, when you're that new to development, you actually have no idea what... Like, how do you make that decision, MooTools or Prototype? Like, and go ahead.
And for the listeners, because I don't know the answer to this question either. But MooTools and Prototype, are these predecessors to jQuery?
Yeah, they probably this time jQuery was very first introduced, and it was like just right before it blew up in popularity.
Okay.
So yeah, they are not necessarily predecessors. They're more like peers, right? They were the same generation, but jQuery just knocked everyone else out of the game.
Sort of like React.
I don't know, man. Look at the pictures of Angular conferences, and
yeah, that is true.
Yeah, it's still big, and Ember's got a smaller but very happy and very very loyal following. Yeah. So I kind of, like, if you follow me on Twitter, you see me get a little frustrated with people complaining about the complexity of JavaScript development today with all the build tools and things like that.
Yeah.
And I can relate to that when I was new and trying to pick between MooTools and jQuery, or MooTools and Prototype, because you don't know how to make that decision. And so I was like, well, what do I understand? This is back in the day when you'd have a little badge at the bottom of your website that would say that it was like XHTML validated. And so I was like, well, let's see which of these websites validate. And jQuery and Prototype and Scriptaculous, their websites did not validate through the W3C validator, and MooTools did. And so I figured if the MooTools developers care enough to validate their HTML, then I guess I'll go ahead and trust them with all the JavaScript as well. So yeah, went with MooTools, and that's where my actual like professional development career just took off. I started writing plugins and publishing them on GitHub and tweeting about it to the MooTools community. The developers there, the core developers on MooTools, invited me into their development IRC channel and really mentored me and helped me out a ton. People like Thomas Aylott, who works at Facebook now, Christoph Poher, who also works at Facebook now on React, and Sebastian Mark Boget, most people call it Mark Beige, or call him Mark Beige. He also works at Facebook on React now. So, yeah, just a whole bunch of them. MooTools sort of got acqui-hired by Facebook like 4 years ago.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, not directly, but it just seemed like, you know how today, like Dan Aberbov now works for Facebook. Oh, James Kyle works for Facebook. Oh, Andrew Clark now works for Facebook. Who's the last one? React Virtualized. Why am I brain farting on his name? I just talked to him like the other day. Give me a break. Brian Vaughn. Now he works for Facebook. It was a lot like that a few years ago in the MooTools world.
Okay.
But yeah, that was it. Thomas Aylott got me a job at a agency. I did a bunch of work there for 2 years for credit card websites and stuff. And then, from there, I never actually had like a tech resume. Like Thomas just got me that job. And then from there, based on some open source work that I did, I just started getting email from people, and the founder of a company called Instructure, a Utah company, emailed me and said, "Hey, I hear that you're someone I should be talking to about JavaScript." And so I went and interviewed there, and it looked like a great opportunity. So I went and worked there for 4 years. And then, now after those 4 years, quit that job and started my current gig with Michael Jackson, training people on React.
Cool. And I am a product of that training, and I highly recommend it as well. It's a good foundation.
You went to the Pinterest one?
Yeah, at Pinterest. So that's where I met Zach Argyle, which is what I mentioned when I've kind of made the connection, the correlations for people from Utah.
Yeah.
Because he's also from Utah. And yeah, very good. I met Mike as well. And you guys do a very good job.
Awesome. Thank you. I was really bummed that I wasn't able to go to that one. We had another workshop that same week that I had to go to. So I guess not totally bummed, because then we had two workshops.
Yeah. So then now you went from like, which is interesting. I kind of want to talk a little more about how you started actually building like plugins for MooTools. Like how did you know when to cross the line between like just using stuff that people have already been made or to actually developing stuff that is actually useful for other people?
Oh, you know, I kind of skipped the whole thing there. So I did that funny little website for my wife, and then I had a job at a software company, where I trained on software, but I didn't write it. I was a implementation consultant for our customers, and I got really interested in how to make our user interface better, you know, kind of from a product standpoint. And a lot of our, like, I can't believe that I skipped this part. This is what got me back into development, really, is our engineers would tell me that my ideas were not possible on the web, or that they would be too much work, or that browsers aren't designed to work that way. And meanwhile, I'm looking at things like Google Docs and spreadsheets and Street View, and I'm like, come on. I'm not asking anything as crazy as these spreadsheets, or literally being able to travel anywhere in the world on your computer. And so I got interested in implementing my ideas, so that then I could take it to our developers and be like, hey, what if we did it like this? And then when they said, you can't do that in a browser, I could say, oh, but I am in a browser. And then after screwing around like that for a little while, they actually started coming to me and asking me questions about JavaScript. And that's when I started to realize, hey, I maybe know what I'm doing here a little bit. And at the time, I switched my employment status from an employee to a contractor, so I had to keep track of projects and invoicing and expenses and stuff. And I just didn't like any of the software out there. And I thought, hey, here's a good idea. Here's a nice project for me to use to learn how to really program on the web, and or how to really become a web developer. And so I built this. It still is probably the thing I'm most proud of anything I've ever created with code. The code is terrible, but the product was awesome to keep track of my receipts and my invoices and all sorts of stuff. It's just beautiful. It looks like a desktop app, has all the keyboard shortcuts, has everything. And so to answer your question, how did I know when to just build my own thing and release it versus try to use the plugins that were out there? This is six, seven, I don't know how many years ago. This is a lot of years ago. And I was doing stuff like, you know how you can use any ellipses at the end of some text to cut it off at the end if it's not big enough for the content? Well, on the web, we always just kind of do that at the end of the words. But on a Mac, they do the ellipses in the middle, which is much more interesting because now you can see the front and the back of the words, which actually helps you identify what you're looking at a lot more, because a lot of files start with the same characters, right? But then they'll end with different ones. And so I was trying to do stuff like that on the web, and there just wasn't stuff out there for the things that I wanted to do in this app. And I was putting so much polish on this thing to make it look and feel and work exactly like a desktop app. And so I think it was just out of expedience or necessity that I built my own things. And I'd look at all the MooTools plugins for patterns, the official ones, and kind of try to follow their code style. And I started putting that stuff on GitHub, and that's when I think it was Christoph Poher, actually, the developer who's at Facebook working on Jest a lot right now. He was like 18 years old. He was so young back then. And he reached out to me. He's like, hey, your code is super clean. We want to invite you into our development IRC channel. And that's where it all kind of kicked off for me.
Wow. Pretty cool. And now you, not only do you train doing React, but you also maintain React Router, which is, I know, one of the, you probably maintain some other open source projects, but I know that's the one big one I know of that you do.
Yeah.
And so how is it, now that you maintain code, how is it like organizing, or so people use the term like herding cats, but how do you like organizing a project? I know you guys just released like V4 of it.
Honestly, that's the thing that we're the worst at. We're just not good at that. And we're learning that it's as important, maybe even slightly more important than the actual code. I've always really respected the Ember community's ability to ship software, like just the way that they ship it and the process that they have, and Yehuda's ability to bring people in and mentor them and then get them some responsibility over things has always been really impressive to me. And now that I'm, now that I've found myself maintaining a library that by most measurements is about as popular as Ember itself, like if you look at GitHub stars and those kinds of things that don't necessarily mean a whole lot, but you know, they give you an idea about how widely used the library is. And React Router is about there on the same level as Ember itself. And I can't believe how well they can organize that project. I don't even know how to do it. So just doing our best.
Yeah. It's interesting too, is because one person that comes to mind is Dan Abramoff, who's like, whenever I respond to it, I don't even open up issues, but just respond to issue. He's always like quick to respond with feedback, or if there's an issue that's open, there's already a Dan Abramoff like question or response.
Yeah.
Like within a few hours, which is interesting. So it's like, I guess it's all about showing up, and the encouragement thing that you mentioned with Yehuda, like knowing when to bring someone in, I think is huge. Cause me as a programmer who's a lot newer than you are, so I'm like almost three years in, I'm like on the verge of like attaching myself to an open source project. Cause I find I have myself the time, but it's always like knowing like, oh, what can I actually do?
Yeah.
And unless like I meet people IRL, and like talk to them and get like feedback and stuff like that, sometimes you just don't want to like jump in the issues and like start asking a bunch of random questions. And so, yeah, mentorship's huge.
Yeah. It makes a big difference. You gotta, you got to do it. You know, you just got to not be afraid to ask questions. I find chat is the best, right? Like issues on GitHub and stuff. I don't know. I like chat. I miss the days of IRC. Slack is great, but I miss those IRC days.
Yeah, it's so I never jumped into IRC. Like I knew about it. I used it prior to actual programming. But when I got into programming, I just never jumped in IRC for whatever other reason. Like, is it IRC not as active thanks to Slack and Gitter and all those other things?
I don't know. Slack is great because it's made chat more accessible to people. Like you said, you didn't you never quite did the IRC thing. So, like, I'm glad that we have a more accessible chat now. But yeah, I don't know how to, I keep wondering how do people have the time, like Dan and Yehuda and stuff. The only thing I can see that's different is that I've got 3 kids.
Yeah.
So I think that's what it is. Like, yeah, I have some open source, but I'm just going to be slower and less responsive than people like Dan. You know, cause I don't know. I don't want to say I have more responsibilities than other open source people, but, you know, we view the world through our own eyes and that's how it feels for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel the same way. I have a kid, but I also feel the same way. So you'd mentioned that you played music and I feel the same way with my music where like I played music to the point where I actually wrote music, played it like in local like bars and stuff like that.
Awesome.
But now I'm at the point where I'm older, where I'm like, I don't know if I really want to put that much effort. I'd rather just play like cover Jack Johnson songs or something in my bedroom.
Those are some of the funnest to just play in your bedroom. Absolutely.
Yeah. And sometimes it's, I guess you could really put the same like lens on writing code where sometimes you don't want to share it. You just want to do it. And, it's like finding that balance. Cause once you share it, then you have to maintain it. And then.
Yeah. I think it was, I think it was Ken Wheeler, another, kind of prominent developer in React who tweeted recently something about like, how do you decide to open source something? Or I wish I could remember the question exactly, but I just replied, I asked the question, is there another part-time job that I'd rather get where I don't get it paid? And if there's something else I'd rather do where I don't get paid, then I won't open source the thing.
Awesome. So, Ryan, I just want to thank you for coming on and sharing your developing story. I found so when I first met you a few months ago and I found out that you didn't come through the CS realm and that you're not only doing React training and also doing this open source project, React Router, I found it fascinating that you weren't actually doing it for that much longer than I was. Yeah. So it's actually pretty encouraging to hear your story and hopefully other people who are listening to the podcast will be encouraged in the same way.
You know, we talked a little bit about Yehuda Katz too, who's a developer that I've always respected. And I think he only got started like a year before I did. Same thing. He graduated in accounting instead of econ, but then just sort of like fell into development. And I mean, look at him, man. He's done so much when you consider everything he's done in Ruby, Rust, and JavaScript.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have to go through the normal channels.
Yeah, yeah. And I find more and more people that I actually have on the podcast, I find more and more that when people say I didn't actually come through developing the normal way, usually your way is actually more normal than the normal way, yeah. Which people think CS degree is like the only path.
Which is probably why people think that the web is a mess.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. When you have people like a super diverse, like diverse as in like people come from just their own way of getting to the web. Then you have things like deciding whether MooTools or Scriptaculous or the jQuery is a thing that could be close enough, but completely different like lenses. And then you have like React, which is a completely different lens than Angular and Ember. So it's nice having that diversity and like perspectives.
Yeah, it's my favorite part.
Awesome. Ryan, I won't keep you any longer. Thanks again for coming on. And if people want to reach out to you too as well, I guess if you want to share your Twitter, GitHub, or any special project?
Yeah, you can just hit me up on Twitter, just Ryan Florence. My DMs are open too if you'd rather go that route.
So there we have it, Ryan Florence, guys. Ryan Florence, hopefully you guys were as impressed as I was with his story. He has done quite a bit, and he had a very interesting, I think every story is definitely interesting in how people get into developing, and Ryan was nothing short of that. He definitely spent a lot of time tinkering and eventually actually fully jumping into the web. So much appreciation for all his hard work and efforts that he puts into his projects. not only running an entire business, but also a large open source project, as well as, you know, handling an entire family. So if you guys are interested in listening to this podcast in the future, please leave some reviews, give me some messages on Twitter. Let me know if you have any recommendations for people to be on the podcast. I am going to be scheduling towards November, the end of November and all of December, some interviews, but just taking a short break, like I said before, this is a short break to kind of collect myself, focus on the family. Until next time, happy hacking.